Good evening, everybody.
Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 108. On this week's show, we're going to do part 7 of our great movie ride film series as we take a look at Tarzan the Ape Man. To my left, as always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
And joining us via Skype this week is the one and only Adam Corbett. Say hello, Adam.
Hello, Adam.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. This episode of Disney Magic Hour is brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, traveling anywhere around the globe, maybe the jungle, visit the experts over at meitravel.com. Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Right now, you're listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/pogomix. His website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter for this show at DizMagicHourPod, D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. You can find our group on Facebook if you search for Disney Magic Hour. The show is on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher. And Melissa, where can everyone find the Instagram and another way to support the show?
Instagram is at Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And if you want to help support us, you can go to patreon.com/DisneyMagicHour. And you can find the two ways to help support us there.
And there you have it, guys. Welcome, everyone. Good morning. Good morning, Adam. Good morning.
Good morning, Pete and Melissa.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us today. As you can tell, everyone, we have a couple of folks that are out this week. We have some people traveling and all that kind of good stuff. But we are here. We three are here to bring you our review of the 7th film. Only 2 remaining after this. We have this week's Tarzan. And then next week is Casablanca. And then the following week is Wizard of Oz. And I think it's kind of safe to say that this is the movie most people wondered why it was so prominent in the Great Movie Ride.
Yeah.
I think this is one of them. Maybe for lesser, you know, just people who don't follow movies as much, Footlight Parade would have been on that list as well. But this is the one where a lot of people were like, that's a choice. It's an odd choice.
Yeah, I think this one more so than Footlight at the end of watching both of them.
Yeah, so Adam, have you ever watched any of the Tarzan films, you know, that starred, how do you say his last name? Your cast, so you should have figured that one out.
Weissmuller?
Weissmuller. That's
or,
good.
Or yeah. Weissmuller, I don't know, he's German. He is German though.
No,
or,
it's with a W. Okay. It's good. Yeah. Well.
No, I've never actually seen any of these original Tarzan films. My only one is the animated from Disney.
Well, there is actually a weird little connection between that one and this one. It's a reach, but there is a connection.
I might have known what you're talking about. I kind of saw it.
All right, so we'll talk about we'll get to that in a moment or so. Actually, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about the background. Oh, actually, before we even get into that, we should note that today is October 1st. And it is the 35th anniversary of Epcot opening, which there's a bunch of ceremonies right now that I'm sure are going to be really exciting to watch on someone's phone. But, you know, that's going on right now. There's a lot of people reselling merchandise. That's all today is. It's just an opportunity for scalpers to make money. But, no, it looks like they're doing a lot of fun stuff over at Epcot today. We'll be there later on. They're doing a special fireworks presentation. Yep. I don't know if it's just going to be the New Year's Eve fireworks with different audio.
I don't know. But I've never seen the New Year's Eve one, so I'm excited.
4th of July is the same thing, I'm pretty sure.
Well, no. The 4th of July is the patriotic music, everything over America, like that type stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So, well, we were there once, actually, during the holiday season.
I don't think they did. With you.
Oh, no? No? Okay. It was years and years ago. It was once during near the Christmas time. And they actually did the whole Walter Cronkite voice and all that kind of stuff. And that was actually their like New Year's one.
That's cool.
So I wonder what they're going to do today. I hope it's just not Illuminations with more at the end. I hope there's some cool audio cues and stuff like that to kind of harken back to the old version of Epcot, as we really do kind of say goodbye maybe to that old version of Epcot going forward in the next 5 to 6 years, I would say. So, yes, what?
Today's also the 46th of Magic Kingdom.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know.
That's a number that people celebrate. Yeah, sure.
They don't, but it's just it's just another, like, we're incrementally inching towards the 50th, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah, the 50th is on its way. But a whole lot to do before that, actually, with other stuff opening up within those next 4 years. But let's go way back in time. Let's go all the way back to March 25th, 1932, which was the film debut of Tarzan the Ape Man. Not the film debut as in Tarzan himself, because there were actually two films made previous to this, silent films, both in 1918, one of them titled Tarzan of the Apes and the other one titled Romance of Tarzan, which both starred Elmo Lincoln, nor President nor a Muppet. He is both. It comes in at a running time of 99 minutes and on a budget of $650,000. It was really big success when it earned over $2.54 million. This, of course, is based on the classic novel Tarzan of the Apes, written by Edgar Rice Burroughs, which was only written 20 years earlier to the release of the film. It was released in 1912. I don't know why, but like in my head, Tarzan's like an 1800s book. But it's not.
I thought it was much, much older than that, actually.
Yeah. So it's not as old as I thought at all. And I actually have read the first book and I really liked it. If all you know of it is like from the Disney one, the names are going to confuse you a little bit because Tarzan's real last name is Clayton.
Yeah.
So when you watch the Disney film, you might get a little tossed up. You have to really, really put that behind. And towards the Disney film, the 1932 that we're going to talk about, Tarzan the Ape Man, it was made and distributed by MGM Studios. Tony Goldwyn, he was the voice of Tarzan in the 1999 Disney adaptation. He is the grandson of Samuel Goldwyn, one of the namesakes of MGM. So a very distant, but a Disney connection in there many, many years down the line. The film is directed by W.S. Van Dyke, who actually started off as an assistant director in 1915 in kind of a classic but wholly racist film, Birth of a Nation. He would go on to direct 91 films of his own from 1917 to 1942. So if you do the math, that's an average of 3.64 films per year, which is...
That's insane.
Yeah, well, they moved a lot quicker then. Most notably, he helmed multiple films of the Thin Man series starring William Powell, which was very, very popular at the time, a comedy mystery series, and actually earned a Best Picture nomination for the first film, The Thin Man. So going towards that, we're going to go into a little bit of the cast in a moment. We're just going to say that, Joel McRae, Bruce Cabot, Preston Foster, Randolph Scott! For all you Blazing Saddles fans, and Buster Crabbe all tested for the role of Tarzan. But ultimately, where did that role go to, Melissa?
It went to a very unique young man. His name is Johnny Weissmuller. I have some cool background on him. Well, I don't know if it's cool. It's interesting. He was born in what is now modern-day Romania. He was actually a sickly child. He had polio at the age of 9, but they told him to take up swimming to kind of help battle the disease. And he wound up becoming a multi-gold medal Olympic winner, in the Summer Olympics in 1924. He broke the 100-meter freestyle in swimming and won gold. For that, he won gold for 400 meter freestyle, and he was part of the U.S. team that won the 200 meter relay. And he also won a gold medal in the Summer Olympics in 1928. So then he kind of transitioned from there into modeling. 1929, he made his first motion picture appearance as Adonis, which is a Greek god. He wore only a fig leaf.
Cool.
The movie was glorifying the American girl. And then MGM noticed him and kind of wanted to pull him into more motion pictures, but he was actually under contract by BVD, the underwear company, as a model. So they bought him out and they pitched him, they billed him as the only man in Hollywood who's natural in the flesh and can act without clothes. So.
Yeah, I guess that's a long title. Slogan.
Sure.
That's it's a word heavy slogan, but yeah. Sure. I mean, it's catchy.
It kind of holds true because he made he made 12 of these Tarzan films, and then he went on to play a different character named Jungle Jim, completely different guy in the jungle who is, you know, friends with the animals, completely different.
Hey, make your money where you can. You know, actually, according to the biography of Edgar Rice Burroughs, just really quick, MGM originally was going for a weightlifter. His name was Herman Brix. Not Hans Brix. He actually later played Tarzan in the films that Burroughs made. It was slightly produced by Burroughs.
Uh-huh.
But he had to be replaced because he was injured while getting hurt on the film Touchdown. So interesting that, you know, in many of these films that we watch and many more that we haven't watched, the lead always kind of falls into place by odd circumstance. It's never planned so much as it is stumbled into or revealed after other things fall apart, where it's like, oh yeah, duh, this makes perfect sense. And there's no difference here for this film. And then a man who would go on to imbibe, was it 12 movies you said?
12 Tarzan movies, yeah.
12. That's insane. That's a huge chunk of films.
And he made 13 of those Jungle Jim movies.
Okay, yeah, wow.
So yeah, he was in it for a while for both of those.
Yeah, the man definitely had a typecast thing going.
Yeah, but he embraced it. He obviously, you know, an easy paycheck for the most part. He's just going to show up, not say much, and emote, you know, for some, you know, portion of the film. And he had a massive Hollywood career. I mean, it seems like a pretty good deal for him.
Yeah, it worked out well. We'll move on to our
other cast?
Yeah, our other cast. I was trying to figure out how to, like, what to call him. I don't really know. I'm moving on to Mr. Harry Holt.
Fellow jungle expeditioner. Yeah. I don't know.
Rolls right off the top. Yeah. Yeah, he's played by Neil Hamilton. He was also a model for shirts in magazines. He got his first big break in 1923 in The White Rose by D.W. Griffith. We best know him, though, as Commissioner Gordon in the 1966 Batman. He was also Nick Carraway in 1926 Great Gatsby, which is actually now a lost film. He starred in John Ford's Mother McCree with John Wayne, so there's a little tie-in for a great movie ride. He also came back in Tarzan and His Mate, and he was also in When Strangers Marry with Robert Mitchum.
Cool.
So, the little thing. He was also in a bunch of TV shows. He hosted Hollywood Screen Test, which I've never heard of.
I never heard of that. That sounds, I guess it was more like an audition sort of show. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I guess it would almost be like a American Idol, but for acting kind of thing.
That's taking it purely on the title. It could have been a card playing game for all I know. You know, I have no idea what it would have been. Joker's Wild of the 30s. That's all it was.
And, just a couple other bunch of TV shows. Perry Mason, 77 Sunset Strip, Maverick, The Real McCoys, Mr. Ed, and That Wonderful Guy with Jack Lemmon.
Nice.
We'll go on to Mr. James Parker, the father. Father. He's played by C. Aubrey Smith. He actually, talking about interesting starts to careers, he started out as an England test cricketer, which apparently if you're a test cricketer, it's like the pro, it's like the ultimate player. Yeah, it doesn't sound like it would be, but it is. And then he became a stage and film actor. His first major role was in The Prisoner of Zenda, where he played the king and a lookalike of the king, so almost kind of like a Prince and the Pauper story tale.
Okay, that's a good title.
Yeah. He was also in Hitchcock's Rebecca. He was in 1941's Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with Spencer Tracy, Ingrid Berman, Lana Turner. He was in...
I just saw L.A. Confidential, so hearing Lana Turner's name makes me giggle.
He was in Little Women in 1949 with Liz Taylor. And he was also in Little Lord Fauntleroy in 1936, which co-starred Dolores Costello Barrymore, which is Drew Barrymore's grandmother, and Freddie Bartholomew, who was a little boy.
What's your name? Barf. What's your full name? Bartholomew.
Bartholomew.
Then we have his daughter, Jane Parker, mm-hmm. played by our wonderful Maureen O'Sullivan. She is mother of Mia Farrow, for everybody. She was originally from Ireland.
No.
Yeah, if you couldn't tell. She was actually in a film, in a movie called Song Oh My Heart at the age of 18. She was kind of picked up while they were filming in Ireland. They saw her. They liked her look. She went on to Hollywood to finish the film up there. And then once she was there, she worked on four other films in 1930. So this is London, Just Imagine, and The Princess and the Plumber. AKA the Mario Brothers film.
No.
Okay, no. Sorry.
Keep going.
And so from there, she kind of went into this Tarzan. She did six of the Tarzan movies, and then she was also in The Thin Man in 1939. No. She was in David Copperfield. She was in Anna Karenina in 1935. She was in the Marx Brothers' Day at the Races. And she was in A Yank at Oxford. It was partially written by F. Scott Fitzgerald, and she actually asked him to make her role a little bit more complex than it was originally written for.
He said no, and he threw gin at her.
She was in She was in Peggy Sue Got Married in 1986.
Wait, what? What is she, your mother? Do you know what role she plays in that?
I didn't write down the name of her character. Man.
That movie's so great.
Because her last film was in 1988, The River Pirates. So
you would assume she was her mother because she was in a movie called The River Pirates?
No.
That's
she
a connection.
She was an older lady at that point.
I think she may have actually been, she was probably somebody else because, I don't think they actually say Peggy Sue's last name. I wonder who she was. She was Elizabeth Alvorg in the movie. I don't know.
I've never seen it, so I'm terrible.
It's really good. Nicolas Cage is like so Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, young Nicolas Cage too.
Yeah, it's quite good. Yeah, Jim Carrey is one of the people in the a cappella group. Man, that's a sweet little silly old movie. And then you know what? She was also in Hannah and Her Sisters, Woody Allen's 86 film.
What is it?
Hannah and Her Sisters.
Oh, I've never seen
that. Yeah. So, wow, what a career! What a crazy, crazy, huge career! My goodness.
Yeah.
97 credits over her acting career. It's more films than that man directed in, 5 years. But what a career. Massive spanning and just always full of quality. But we're going to talk about this movie then. Is there anyone else you want to talk about the cast?
I actually have a couple of things with the cast. It's not very long.
Okay.
So there's a woman, Mrs. Cutton. She is...
Cutter? Was it Cutter or Cutton?
Oh, I don't know if autocorrect screwed me up.
It may have botched you on that one. Not that it's your fault. I'm just saying.
I mean, she was in the movie for a hot second. She just talked to her at the thing. But she was played by Doris Lloyd, and I thought it was interesting. Doris Lloyd actually voiced the Rose in Alice in Wonderland in the Disney.
Oh, handle. That's awesome. Very cool.
I thought that was cool. And she was also in an uncredited role in Mary Poppins.
She was the Rose. Okay, so she was the tawdy one. Yeah that makes sense. Yeah. All right. Yeah, that works out.
Beamish, who comes in also for a little bit, kind of bringing in her luggage and stuff, he also was in Rebecca and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with C. Aubrey Smith, and he comes back in Tarzan and His Meat. He also, though, is very well known for The Invisible Man, The Wolf Man, and Captain Blood. So, thought you'd like those.
Sloth love Captain Blood.
And I thought this was really interesting. I gotta talk about it more. Did anybody actually see a bird creature in this movie?
I know I've asked you that. You asked me that times. Through the film, and I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't see anything.
No, it was hard to make out enough and trying to find a bird creature.
Yeah, if you Google Tarzan and bird creature, you will get an image, a black and white image of this bird creature. It's credited on IMDb, Wikipedia, everything, saying that he was in this film. But it's played by Johnny Ek. And if you don't know who Johnny Ek is, definitely Google him. He was actually born. He's a twin. He was born without the lower half of his torso.
Oh my God, I know this dude.
You do, because
he's in Freaks.
In Freaks.
Yes. Oh my God.
Wow.
He's in Freaks. Everyone should see the movie. Browning's 1934, I believe. Freaks.
1932.
One of the best, oh my God, one of the best films ever made. I mean, not really, but it kind of is.
But it was funny.
In that genre.
Yeah. Yeah.
And during the live thread, I actually put a GIF up of the One of Us thing without actually knowing this.
I'm looking at the picture right now. This would definitely stick out.
It would, but they have.
Oh, that's why. This is wrong. It's not. It's in Tarzan Escapes.
That's what I'm saying. It is in Tarzan Escapes, but IMDb does have him credited on Tarzan and the Ape Man also. So I'm not sure if it was cut footage from this first one and they put it in a later one. I couldn't find out any more on it.
That's a possibility.
He is in IMDb though as it, so I'm not sure. But that costume was actually casted from his body and then made for this.
Yeah, but he 100. Yeah, because that's his arms. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a scene in Freaks where he lights his own cigarette. Folks, he's got no arms, no legs. He has only a torso.
He has arms.
Oh, no, he has arms.
Just not the lower half of his body. If you like Google Johnny Eck, the famous thing that he was known for was doing a one-handed headstand. So he's just kind of like a torso on one hand.
This may not be the exact guy then that I'm thinking of for Freaks, because there's a man in Freaks who's just a torso.
Oh yeah, no, he has arms.
Okay, all right. The other cat that I was thinking of, he has just a torso. He lights his own cigarette. And also, he threateningly crawls towards a woman with a knife in his teeth, and it is terrifying.
And no, that's not this guy. But yeah, he actually has credits on like 3 of the Tarzan films: Tarzan the Ape Man, Tarzan Escapes, and Tarzan Secret Treasure. So,
but they're all bird characters. It could be the same thing.
That's the thing. Like, I don't know if they
bird,
just had
Goonie bird creature.
Yeah, so I don't know if they had like one shot of it and they used it for the 3 movies. But I couldn't find it in this movie, but it's on IMDb, so. I don't know.
Amazing.
I thought you'd like that, though.
All right. And also, just so you know, the guy I'm thinking of with the no arms, no legs, his name is Prince Randian. Prince Randian. Absolutely amazing. I cannot believe he lived to the age of 63. That's news to me. So huzzah to you, young man. All right. So casting, that's good?
That's good.
All right. So a little bit more on the production of this film, there's not a lot of information on the actual production of this film. So there is some info from TCM.com that I was able to find, and it is basically scatter notes from old articles that they were able to scrounge up. So New York Times, this is direct from TCM, New York Times news items note that the exterior sequences were filmed in Western Mexico and at Sherwood Forest in California. According to Hollywood Reporter, filming also took place at Sherwood Lake, which may have been located at Sherwood Forest. A November 1939 Hollywood Reporter news item notes that Nick Grindy was in charge of the second unit of limb-to-limb jumpers and the pygmies. So when you see the flying trapezius and the pygmies and whatnot, that was done by Nick Grindy or Nick Grind. And also, according to a New York Times article, there were a number of production difficulties encountered by the film crew. A near tragedy occurred when a hippopotamus charged at a makeshift reflecting wall supported by crewmen. And also, the Hollywood Reporter also indicated that second cameraman Steve Bowder narrowly escaped serious injury when a lion attacked him and broke his camera.
Oh my goodness.
So, not the most safe of things. Also in the film, just to note, the film used a fair amount of stock footage when you watch it in the beginning of the film, in the opening like 10 minutes. There's a lot of obvious back projection effects being used where the actors are walking in front of a screen. That footage was from a previous film shot by W.S. Van Dyke, 1931's Traitor Horn. And this is a stretch, but let's think about this. Near the beginning of the movie, we kind of get like an intro to Africa from Jane and her father, okay? They sort of give you a lot of stuff. One of the tribes, or the tribe, that she's introduced to is Wakumba. So Wakumba to some people's thoughts, it could be the inspiration for Wakanda, since it is so, so similar. And this movie was such a massive hit and, you know, quite influential that there's, you know, there's an idea that the, you know, Wakanda, it's close. It's close. I'd say it's worth a shot. Let's talk about the plot, shall we? I'm going to go through the plot for you. It's not an overly detailed plot, but there is quite a bit to discuss. So I'm going to give you the story right here, and then we're going to talk about the film itself. So James Parker and Harry Holt are explorers in Africa in search of the rumored elephant burial ground where elephants go to take their final rest. The location for these two gentlemen is desired because of the millions in ivory that would just be lying there that they could then bring back home to England. Unknown to James Parker, who is the senior of the two, Jane, his daughter, arrives in Africa full of energy, ready to explore, take this new life. She's ready to leave, you know, civilization behind her. And as quickly as she adapts to her surroundings, Holt very quickly takes to Jane in a, you know, an affectionate kind of way. So Jane wants in on the expedition to the elephant graveyard, but her father has some holdups about that. Number one, death. So unfortunately for Jane, maybe, though, ultimately, I don't know, Holt sides with Jane in the argument in an effort to win her affection, and the father reluctantly sort of agrees to everything and says, okay, she can go. A little bit of thing that they should know, though, where they're going, it is called the Mutier Escarpment, and it is largely forbidden for the natives to even look at. It is punishable upon death to even look in the direction of where they're going to be walking to. So on their journey to this place, they get an experience of that firsthand as an injured man, native gentleman, stumbles into the park and seems to be under huge duress. They hide him as they hear other people chasing after him, and is this tribe called the Ubangi tribe. They arrive, they're looking for this man, and Holt throws a blanket over him, sits on him, which, you know what, in the spirit of the moment, wasn't a bad plan. they leave the camp without, you know, finding their, you know, their target, but unfortunately the man has passed away. But before the man passed away, he kind of pointed in a direction, and he claimed that he'd looked upon the Mutier. So now they have a direction in which to travel. The group arrives at a rock wall that surrounds this area that they're trying to get into. One man falls to his death. Jane nearly falls to her death. And then they hear a strange call emerge from the jungle, and it sounds human. As they attempt to cross a river then to get closer to this land, they are attacked and surrounded by hippos, alligators, some of them die, and then just as about all is about to be lost, they're about to be just mauled by hippopotamuses, which evidently some of the crew were, they hear that strange call again. It is Tarzan, and he calls the hippos off of them so he can speak to the animals, folks. He also... He's a child. He's a kidnapper. He just kidnaps Jane. Just takes Jane, flies off into the jungle. And at first, Jane is terrified, but they make a little bit of a connection. I can't explain how. I'll be honest with you. There's no logical reason as to the why of that, but they do. Tarzan then goes to get food for Jane. And while he's gone, Harry and James find, you know, this treehouse and everything that Tarzan has brought her to. And they're like, we're going to save you. And in saving her, some of Tarzan's ape friends come over to sort of, I don't know if they were like not going to harm anyone, but they don't seem like it. Well, Harry's taking no chances. He shoots one of them dead. Tarzan, of course, comes back to see this and goes full Rambo on all the humans. He drowns one man, kills another, then recaptures Jane, then fights off a lion with the help of an elephant. Everything that I just said makes sense when you're watching the movie. It may not right now, but it makes sense in the idea of the film. So he fights off this elephant, this lion, with the help of an elephant, but he gets badly hurt. So the elephant picks him up in his mouth by the head, and I thought that would break his neck. Brings him back to, you know, like more familiar ground, and then all of his ape friends come in. They go and get Jane. Jane heals him up. And a lot of Beauty and the Beast things are happening in this film. And we're going to get to that, but there's a lot of lifting that Beauty and the Beast did for this film. A lot. So Jane sees that he's injured. She heals him back to health. And then they have a really, then their like connection really grows. They swim some laps. Tarzan throws her a lot. And some greatly misquoted dialogue happens where he says, Jane, Tarzan, not me, Jane, you, Tarzan. He never says that. But everyone quotes this film as him saying that. It's really, really weird. But that happens a lot, actually. Quite common. So while atop a tree, Jane sees her father fall sickly in the jungle from her magic mirror. Oh, no, just her treehouse. So Tarzan, though it hurts him to see him go, brings Jane to her father and drops her off, basically, via vine. Reunited, Jane is happy to see her father, but then misses Tarzan instantly. You'll know this because of the ear-piercing shrieks that she gives throughout the entire film of saying the word Tarzan and or father. That is the two most commonly said words in this film, and they are done at such a pitch that dolphins would freak out. So, there is trouble amiss, though, in the jungle, because as soon as like they all get reunited and Tarzan goes on his way, they instantly get captured by Gaston. And they're captured by a bunch of pygmies, and they're going to be killed for sport as the pygmies grab their captors with a rope and then drop them into his pit with this sort of ape-looking monstrosity, but more like savage-looking than any ape that we've seen in the film so far. But no worries. Tarzan saves the day with his elephants and his ape friends. They escape the camp. And James is still the father. He's still like kind of weak and kind of sick. And he's on an elephant that also got injured during this whole thing. And the elephant starts walking. And James says, oh, he knows he's dying. He's going to go to the elephant graveyard. Now we can go. So while on the back of the elephant makes his way to the elephant graveyard. Upon seeing his goal achieved, James Parker passes away. Harry goes off to England. Jane stays with Tarzan to make a new life with their chimp, who's named Cheetah, which is weird. And we have a nice shot of them on the edge of a cliff, looking out into the jungle to start their new life together. The end. So I joked about the Beauty and the Beast thing, but I'm not joking. There's the plot points with the father are kind of like straight out of Beauty and the Beast kind of lifts them.
Yeah, though I think in the original Beauty and the Beast, it was kind of similar.
Okay.
But still, yeah, I get what you were saying.
Yeah, but like it's very specific, you know, with the he gets injured by the thing and she nurses him back. And that's when they kind of have their, there's something there moment. And then her seeing her father sick and Tarzan, like she could have just stayed there. Like they reached the point where she was comfortable enough that she didn't want to go back. But then he brings her back knowing that, thinking obviously, the thing of she's going to be gone now, but he wants her to be happy to be with her father. Then they get kidnapped and then he's going to come in and save the day. Like it's similar.
Yeah.
It's definitely got its ties in it. So let's talk about the movie itself. I actually think the beginning of this film is really good. I actually think most of this film is really good. I'm terribly distracted by Marino Sullivan screaming almost every line of dialogue.
Yeah, agreed. She definitely has a scream queen quality to her and just spoken dialogue and, kind of want to see her in a horror movie. I think that'd be kind of interesting.
I don't know, Melissa, what did you think, towards what I said? I mean, I actually think for a film made at the time it was made, they do some kind of crazy stunts. Yeah. There's a lot of animals like mauling people just for your entertainment. And it's quite nicely shot outside of the screen, the front projection, the screen projection shots. I think it looks really nice. I think a lot of this film is really well done.
I
couldn't get past her voice.
It was great, and it moved along really quickly, and then there was a certain point, it was like the last half hour, which is pretty much when it's like her and Tarzan, and the whole, like, even when there's a lot of the shots of the animals in the forest, whether it's the lion chasing him or the lion chasing cheetah or whatever. Like, that stuff went on really long. It took me out of it. It started to get very draggy. And then it was like, oh, and then they're going to get captured by the pygmies. Like, I don't know. It just started to become very laborious, like, towards the end. And her screaming did not help, because then every, like, terrible situation was just accentuated by her vocal distress.
But I didn't even think in, like, scenes where they were in danger, she's just screaming time. That's where my issue came in.
My biggest thing with her character that really annoyed me was she flip-flopped, like,
constantly.
Like, save me, don't leave me, no, leave me, I don't want to be here, no, no. Like, it was just, and the, like, yeah, and every time she said a word, it was, like, this high-pitched scream of, like, Tarzan, no! Or Tarzan, no!
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
A lot of repeated, like, just saying the same word over and over. There are spots where she says Tarzan, like, legitimately 8 or 9 times in a row.
Yeah. And when father was dying, I mean,
yeah,
that was 18 fathers. It was like, okay.
Now, Adam, did you feel that it got laborious, as Melissa put it, towards the end?
I found myself really doing something I don't like to do, which is analyzing a film as old as it is using our modern principles and our modern way of looking in film. And I think I'm being a little heavy-handed on it, my opinion with it. It definitely seemed to drag. I was telling my daughter on the way here that it was 1.5 hours. It felt like 2.
Yeah.
And it seemed to just stretch. There's this 5-minute sequence towards the end when Tarzan's calling his animal friends. It's just the yelp for 5 minutes, and it just went on way too long. And there's a lot of things like that kind of bugged me about it.
But overall, then, did you think that, I mean, how did you feel towards the first 3/4 of the film? Did you think that it moved along at a good pace and that it just sort of got caught up in itself a little bit?
I think so. I'm going to definitely agree with Melissa. When you get to the pygmies, it feels like it should have been in a different film. It didn't quite fit, because all of a sudden, like, these pygmies are there. And it's – maybe I'm wrong, but did they even talk about them at all throughout the movie?
Not really.
No, they did say something like that, because didn't I make a joke about – I feel like the father did actually reference them at one point. But regardless, if he mentioned them once or not at all, it really doesn't matter. They do sort of appear out of the brush. Yeah, I didn't mind the pygmy thing. I thought it was kind of cool. I don't know. I liked it because I thought they were in real danger.
Yeah.
That ape costume, I mean, for the time, I'm sure it looked fine. Like, it looks really weird at this point, but it looked like a Morlock. Actually, it kind of looked like a Morlock from the Time Machine film with Rod Taylor from, what, 62 or something like that? So it kind of had a little warm part for me. But I didn't mind the ending. I just minded – it was just her screaming. It was the dialogue pieces where Tarzan is, like, throwing her around and, like, grabbing her by the foot and, like, almost, like, just tossing her like a kid, and she'll scream, and then she'll be the independent, like, strong woman. And then she's this, like, blubbering mess because he's, you know, gone, like, an inch away from her.
Yeah.
That jumping back and forth was just not consistent for me.
It's called Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah. And again, that's why this is Beauty and the Beast. Like, that's exactly what this is.
You know what? The thing with the pygmies, it comes at the end of that really long sequence of all the, you know, Tarzan being injured. Then we have Tarzan with the hippos and the alligators. Like, there was just so much of, like... And, like, Adam was saying, he was just, like, yelling in the jungle. Like, I don't know. Those scenes just stretched on way too long.
Maureen O'Sullivan, to her last day, insisted that that was his voice with no coaching.
I read that they actually did use a technique. It was his yelling, but they also did play, like, some of it backwards. So, like, there is a little bit of, you know, manipulation with it, but it was his yell.
I actually think that no one knows. That's my.
I mean, I think the sound artist definitely did some manipulation.
After
with it,
looking, but, like, trying to look into the background of this film, there's just not a lot. A lot of it is handed down stories and maybe original articles that were written at the time when the film was being made. But there is not a lot written down, like, this is how we did this.
Yeah.
You know, because I was super curious of was that Johnny Weissmuller with the lion? Because it looks like him. I mean, Johnny Weissmuller, he's a big man. Like, that's a big dude.
Yeah.
And it definitely looked like him, but that seems crazy that you would let your star, someone who isn't maybe, you know, trained in doing something like that. Because they also use, I know it looks like a jaguar.
No, it was flipped. I think it looked like a cheetah, but it was really a jaguar or something like that.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. It was, it looked like one, but like that looked crazy dangerous too.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of this movie that I'm like, oh, wow, that's ballsy. That's a crazy ballsy thing to do. Maybe not smart, but, you know, ballsy thing to do. So I don't know, you know, who did what. There's a fair amount of stunt people listed on here. There are stunt doubles. I just don't know who they did, except for Alfredo Cardona, who was the swinging shot double for Weissmuller during that stuff. But, you know, anyways, back to the actual, you know, does the film, you know, flow and whatnot? I don't know. This isn't a movie I'm going to watch again, and it's purely because of her voice. I have a thing, though. This is like a thing, a problem for me. Whenever we watch a film, if there's a character that's too screamy, it irritates me. Like, it just annoys me, and I won't watch.
That's why you never finished Attack on Titan, which is amazing.
Yeah, no, I won't, because the acting is horrible garbage. Because even when they're eating a sandwich, they're like, oh my God, a sandwich! You know, it's like, it's so, it's garbage. So I can't sit through that all the time, and she really pushed it.
Yeah. I mean, sitting through it again, like I sat through it the first time and then you watched it and I was here, like that was the part where I was like, nah, I gotta get up and go because
I immediately was thinking of Singing in the Rain, where the plot of the movie where they dubbed her out.
Yeah, like they actually needed a dubbing on this one. But if we took that out, if you take that portion out of the film, the fact that she screams dialogue, which look, she got a script that was for an hour and a half film, and she had pages of dialogue that just had a word on it. Like, I don't know what they were expecting her to do, but, you know, they didn't give her a lot to say also. It's not like she was supposed to write the script on herself. Like, this is what she was given. But it's just the delivery and that high-pitched scream on every word.
Yeah.
And her flip-flopping. Because I liked when she was, you know, like Jane, who seemed like very comfortable, like doing whatever came up. Yeah. She was just game for it. I really loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, when she turned into like either the helpless one or the lovey-dovey one, she got really annoying.
But even the lovey-dovey, like there's some really funny parts in it, like when they're in the water and whatnot, when he's not trying to drown her, that was another. Like, why would you? Why? I don't care if you don't understand the English language. No one is saying drown me. Like, that isn't happening. Unless you're like a kid and your parents are of a certain religion, no one's purposely dunking your head underwater and thinking it's fun. So
I don't know. When I used to get tossed around the pool out by my dad and my cousins, they like to do that a lot. Just toss me in the water.
Toss you in the water is one thing.
And why are they playing in this water anyway? There's alligators and hippos. They're obviously teaming up and attacking everybody. So
they had to show off his swimming.
He's friends with the animals, though. Remember? You go, oh, that thing. You can do that.
He can also apparently scream that while swimming the 200 meter.
Yeah, while his face is underwater. I know. I noticed that. That maybe wasn't the best use of the voice. When his face is clearly underwater and he's like doing the yell. That was kind of funny. But what I was saying was, I like that scene where she actually, you know, she's trying to talk with him and he can't respond. And she says something like, this is nice, talking to someone who doesn't know English or something like that. Like, I don't know. It just kind of flipped the role on the male-female thing where it's like, oh, you'd be much better if you didn't speak. You know, you're too pretty. Why don't you not speak? She kind of does that to him.
Yeah.
Like, you're really gorgeous. It's great that you have no idea what I'm saying. Like, I like that part. Like, I think that's really funny. I thought it was really cool. I like the father character. I liked Hoyt. Harry. Whatever. His last name is Holt or Harry. I don't remember. I liked him. It's Holt. Steve Holt. Mrs. Cutton was... You're all right. It's Cutton. She was in it for, like, 3 seconds. She said roughly 87 words.
In those 3 seconds,
I didn't understand a single, just a line of dialogue out of her.
That was when I turned on the captioning.
That was the most, I turned on the captioning at that point. I was like, oh, is this what's going to happen? was like, I'm not going to be able to understand anybody. I have no idea what she said, but she was great. I liked Beamish. You know, he was the, I don't know. I like so much of this film. Her screaming just brings it to the just the gallows for me. I could not stand it.
I agree. I thought it was an interesting take on Tarzan. I'm not very familiar with Tarzan. I know I read / taught the original Edgar Rice Burroughs book when I was student teaching because we were doing the hero's journey.
Okay. Yeah, Joseph Campbell.
Yeah. And obviously I've watched the Disney one, but I thought it was interesting how Tarzan goes on this murder rampage, not only murdering like the people, which I thought was kind of crazy. I know it was revenge or whatever, but it was just kind of like, oh my gosh, he's drowning this guy.
No, he kills in the book too.
No, yeah, but it's like, it's just so interesting. And then like, I thought I was really surprised more with a lot of the killing of the animals.
How much killing of animals were there?
Well, he kills the wildebeest for food, which I understand.
Yeah. But
then he definitely killed one or two of the big cats.
Yeah, well, they attacked him.
But yet then he can yell and control the other ones. Like, I don't know.
Well, because if you look at it, the ones that he can control are more of like the docile animals.
A hippo is not docile.
In the overall span of things, when you look at an animal.
I was on Kilimanjaro Safari. They said that the hippos are the deadliest animals.
A movie, though. Like, yes, he's able to communicate with some people. That's like saying, I can talk to humans. Therefore, I can talk to all humans. No. If you can talk to some animals, doesn't mean you can talk to all animals.
I just thought it was interesting that.
Or maybe he can talk to them and they just think he's a massive dick.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, who's this guy? Like, he's got nothing to do what he says. I'm a freaking lion.
King of the jungle.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to listen to what this guy says. I don't even know what this thing is. He's not even a guy. He's just a thing. So, I mean, yeah, he can talk to animals. Doesn't mean that everyone has to listen to him.
I don't know. I thought it was interesting how they portrayed
him. I mean, can you hear me right now, right?
I hear you, but
you
really
don't listen.
No.
Exactly. So, there you go. There's your logic behind that.
Okay.
Happy? Those ape costumes were pretty good.
I thought it was interesting.
I was all right with the ape costumes. I thought they looked pretty damn good, actually.
They were supposed to be, like, the chimps were supposed to be the baby apes, and the humans were supposed to be, like, the adults.
Yeah.
But then they kind of abandoned that after this one because I guess they...
I don't get it. I read that, too. I don't know what that means. Like, what does that mean? They didn't use human actors in the costumes anymore? Or they didn't use baby chimps? Like, I have no idea what that statement means.
I don't know. I didn't see any of the other
types. They took our jobs!
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I read that, too, and I was like... I don't know what that means yet.
Unless maybe like they were, because I don't think it didn't come off like established that like this was a baby and that was their, you know, parents.
One's large, one's small. One's an adult, one's a baby. I mean, they are the same size as all the humans, which is kind of, I'm like, all right, well, sure. Yeah. Like they, you know, but I, the only thing I could think of is that they were like, we can't use live chimps on the set, but they definitely use live chimps because because Cheetah's in a lot of those films, not the same monkey, but not in all of them, but you know, they definitely do that. So I think they may have taken the man in suit out of the film.
I think, yeah, they abandoned that whole
to only then be revisited in Stanley Kubrick's 2001 in seemingly the same costumes because they didn't look bad. Did you guys notice that there was, was there music in this thing? Well, Melissa, you looked into the music bit, didn't you?
I did a little bit. There's an uncredited musician on IMDb, but that's an actual different name than the one on Wikipedia, which I know Wikipedia isn't the end-all be-all, but I found it interesting that there was actually no like consistent through of who did the music. And I honestly don't remember much, so...
What do you mean you don't remember much?
Music.
Like in life?
Music.
Music. Oh, no, I don't remember music at all.
No.
I have no recollection of music actually in this film at all. William Axt is credited as the musical director or uncredited as the musical director in this film. But yeah, there's no real soundtrack that I can point to and be like, oh, this happens. I'm sure there is. There's some cues, but nothing of note, nothing that stands out.
The only thing was at the end when Jane, Tarzan, and Cheetah are up on the...
Yeah, there's a flourish, you know.
It was Romeo and Juliet by I'm gonna look it up.
Tchaikovsky?
Yes.
Boom. Boom.
That was the only like music distinct that I found and remembered.
Did it matter to you? Did it have any impact? I mean, did you notice, like, were you watching it? You were like, where's my Tarzan? Where the hell is Phil Collins?
Oh, no. No, I was just going to say, I noticed that end music because I knew it was familiar. So
where the hell is Phil Collins, though?
I don't know.
Phil Collins, you out there? All right. So anyone, did you want to say anything more towards Tarzan the Ape Man before we kind of get into our questions? Because I think our last question is sort of the meat and potatoes of the discussion on this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't feel that the relationship between Jane and Tarzan was established enough to where, like, she all of a sudden decides to stay. Like, it just came off as like, oh, okay, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I mean, she when she appears, she says, oh my God, I love it here. I'm ready to leave civilization behind. Then over the course of a couple hours, there's no real indication of time here. There's a couple
maybe
of nights.
Day.
No, they definitely go a night because they have the night scene where the injured man appears at the camp. Over that time, she meets a hunky man who can't speak, is a great swimmer, and lives in the forest, in the jungle, has ape friends. I mean, he has ape friends. He can talk to hippopotamuses. He can take care of her and hunt. I don't know. Seems cool. Why not?
I don't know.
People have done dumber things on less, in my opinion. I think this is a fine decision.
All right.
I mean, I'm not saying you have to agree with me. I'm just saying it's Tarzan. I don't, you know, like, I'm not going to.
I don't know. I guess because, like, the cartoon and the book did it so much better. Like, there was so much more development between the two that.
There was a montage of development.
Yeah. And what this movie lacked was that it would. Instead, took a montage of animals running and chasing everybody.
So what you're
and
saying?
And Tarzan killing everyone.
So what you're saying is we need Phil Collins.
Sure.
I wouldn't mind a Phil Collins montage in the middle of this film. Son of Man.
Oh yeah, it would definitely work.
It would work. So you didn't like it?
I didn't feel like it was like. It didn't feel like the relationship was established to the extent where she was like, yeah, I'm going to live in the jungle with this guy. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because I think up until the last minute, she was probably going to go back with her father. And then when he croaks, it's like, oh, okay, I'm just going to stay. You know,
right. And not even like she's going to stay in Africa.
No,
like,
I don't think so.
She's like, I don't even care like if she was going to stay in Africa. Like, you know, they had obviously a place where they brought all her stuff, like a little shack or whatever, but like she decides to stay with him. That was the part where I was like, I don't feel like there's that connection. I don't know. It just came off as convenient, sudden, and weird.
Okay. I mean, I feel like she was ready to stay with him, and then the father got sick, and then she wanted to go tend to the father, but she instantly missed him, so the father dying was sort of just. She was like, oh, well, now I can save him. Yeah, it kind of worked out in her favor, in a sense. At least towards Tarzan's favor. You know, just so everyone knows, you never read the book. Tarzan, not with Jane in the books.
Jane's also pretty American, good. So I think that's
American.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she's British here. They make her British in the animated movie.
It
like,
sounds,
they kind of,
it sounds yeah. more refined. That's why.
Because also, like, the father's
a professor.
He's
also Lord Greystoke. You know, like... It, you know, Tarzan is.
Yeah.
So it just sounds better. But yeah, I would love to see a film with an American Jane. That'd be like, I would actually think it would sound weird. Like if she just popped up and it was like Emma Stone. I'd be like, oh my God, Tarzan. I'd be like, why don't you have an accent?
Was it? Oh no, I was thinking of George of the Jungle with Brendan Fraser. That was a good movie.
That's a movie. I mean, yeah. That's what's her name.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to
Who's think in all the 2.5-hour comedy films? Leslie Manhans.
Yeah.
Yeah, Leslie Mann. She's in all that. She looks great in that movie. They both look really good in that movie. That's two
movie.
Super attractive people in that movie. The only thing I really remember that movie is there were like the guides. Like they all like she had like guides with her and stuff. And there was a villain. I don't remember who the villain was, but when the villain fails. The guides break the fourth wall and they stare at the camera and they're like, and this is the part where we all laugh. And it was pretty good. We laughed pretty hard at that point. All right, let's get to our three questions on this film here. Moral. More little moral what do we got here? I'm thinking we actually have somewhat of a moral, but I'm gonna sell it. So for me, they have this thing of life away from civilization can be just as savage, but more beautiful. And love can breach any gap. That's a moral. That's what they're trying to tell you.
Really?
It doesn't work for you because you're stone hot. Lady stone hot.
I'd be okay with that.
That's what I actually do think it is trying to tell that. Because that's kind of the thing of Tarzan. Is the whole, how civilized is civilization compared to how civilized is the law of the jungle? And granted, I mean, like, the movie doesn't go deep into it in this one, but I do think that that sort of shows its face a couple of times. Jane obviously is not yeehaw happy about regular civilization anymore. And though there are massive challenges to be overcome in a jungle, like getting eaten by lions, she decides that she is more comfortable taking on those challenges than going back to the hustle and bustle of the real world.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Great.
Okay.
Millie, do you have any thoughts on the moral at all?
I said I did not find one. I tried to think of what it could be. I said that, like, I don't know. I guess when I think of a Tarzan or this kind of movie, like, I feel like there would have been more of a tale, like how in the animated one, like, there's a whole, like, thing between, like, man and nature and the conflicts, you know, between the two and how to live in harmony. Like, there was... I didn't feel like there was anything like that. You know, even Tarzan kind of kills at random.
He doesn't kill at random.
I felt
he kill at random. He doesn't just, like, go up to people and is like, for no reason, I'm going to kill you.
All right. I felt like...
They shot his friends and he was like, I'm going to kill you.
But, like, I didn't even feel like that was really established as it was in, like, the other movie. Like, or in the book. Like,
They shot him. He shoots an ape. How is it not established?
No.
That was pretty A to B right there.
Yeah.
Right?
I meant, like, the fact that the Tarzan and the ape's relationship, like...
What? Okay. All right.
Like...
You didn't buy the relationship between Tarzan and the ape.
It would be different if someone, like, shot Adam or someone shot you. Like, obviously, I know you a bit more. Like, there would be, like, a difference. Like, I don't know if I'd go on, like, a vengeance kill if somebody killed Adam. Like, I'd be really upset about it, but, like...
He grew up with these apes.
Sorry, Adam.
It's called Tarzan the Ape Man. It's in the title.
I'm saying there wasn't anything established. I felt like this movie asked you to bring a lot into it, knowing things that then, like, they didn't really show enough of to get you invested. I wasn't invested in any of his relationships.
Okay.
So I felt like him killing all these people and all these
things,
like, it just, I don't know, it just came off as... I don't know. It just didn't come off.
It didn't work for you. Okay. So the moral for you is not there.
I didn't
absence.
Find one, and I didn't find, like, you know, not even the, like, even if you were going to say, like, we want to find the elephant graveyard because we don't want to kill elephants. We just want to find, like, the natural stuff so we can, you know, they were just interested in the ivory. So, like, they don't want to be maybe, but they, like, if they came across, like, I don't want to be poachers, like, you know, we just want to find, like, the naturally dead elephants so we can harvest their ivory that way. Like, maybe something. But, like, there was nothing. There was no redeeming qualities. I don't know. Yeah, I didn't
They were treasure it. Hunters, though. So, like...
No, I understand that. I'm just saying, like... But, like, the whole point of, like, finding the elephant graveyard was to get the ivory, right?
Uh-huh.
So, but, like, if you wanted to say, like... Even something where it's like, I want to find the ivory on the dead elephants because I don't want to go kill live elephants. Like, just something. Give me a little something. I don't know. I just felt like nobody had, like, a
motive.
Compass.
You wanted a purpose between, okay, I don't know. Treasure hunting was it. But, like, so you then, and this isn't like, I'm not like, you know, when you watch, God, what is it called? What's the Nicolas Cage thing with the, we're going to steal the independent.
Oh, National Treasure.
When you watch National Treasure, you're like, you're in. Because you're like, look, he really cares about this document. And we can't let Boromir get it.
Well, yeah, obviously. Boromir is evil.
Right. Speaking of Boromir, do you pick up on, it kind of looked a little Lord of the Rings Fellowship when they're climbing the side of the mountain.
Yes.
It looked just like a shot-by-shot of Fellowship when they're hugging the mountain. Actually.
I was waiting for the mountain to come to life and start fighting him.
Yeah.
That was Hobbit.
Whatever.
No, that was Hobbit.
That's what I thought of.
Okay.
This is Lord of the Rings universe. Come on. Give me some credit.
I'm giving you credit. Sarah wasn't giving you credit.
That was Hobbit.
All right. So, Adam, do you think there is a moral?
No, I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole that Melissa took us down, but I'm going to say not really. I think there was a couple points where, you know, when the explorers were beating the natives, which kind of leads towards your argument, Pete, but they didn't show enough of that. And to me, it just seemed like an adventure tale that kind of went wildly out of control, and I didn't get a moral or an emotional response.
The only emotional response I got was stop screaming. That was the only emotional response I got from me. What is the iconic shot of this film? Melissa, do you want to tell me how the film doesn't establish itself as an iconic shot?
I honestly think the only iconic shot has to be the end where it's the three of them on the mountain.
I think that's the accurate answer. Yeah. That's my answer too.
Are
we all on the same page on that? Yeah. Nothing else really.
Because even like him swinging through the trees, like I don't feel like there's that shot of him like on a vine that distinctly came out to me where I was like, oh.
Like the scene in Great Movie Ride is not the scene that happens in this film. Like that does not happen.
That had to be from a later movie. Because she's in the leopard.
Yeah,
thing.
She's all made up and she's got like, you know, she's riding the elephant. Cheetah. She's clearly like friends with Cheetah at this point, you know, in the Great Movie Ride. The only other thing that I could think of is, and because I've seen it on a number of like the box art, is when they're in the water and he's like playing with her foot.
Oh, okay.
You know, just them in the water. Because I think the them in the water scene, again, because it's the Tarzan Jane, you know, that thing, that might get you to say that that's the iconic shot. But I actually really thought the shot at the end was really nice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was.
And then that
it was.
Phil Collins music cues up, and it's hot. Remember the scene where he's going through the trees with his feet, and he's just like on a skateboard?
No, he used the trapezius.
Okay, so we all agree that our iconic shot is the closing shot when they're on the edge cliff, you know, kind of looking out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Definitely.
Does it hold up? Adam, what do you think?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. It's extremely, I mean, other than dated, obviously, but it didn't, as a modern viewer, it didn't hold my attention. It has a couple cool scenes. The scene with the elephant graveyard, I thought was a great piece, set piece. And the ending was nice, but I don't think it holds up at all. I don't think I'd ever see it again.
Melissa?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I don't feel that the relationships were really well established. I don't feel like I liked the beginning. It was just the last half of the movie, the last half hour just really made it fall apart to the point where I don't really care for it. It does, though, make me want to watch some of the other films, at least the six that Maureen O'Sullivan was in, to see like
at least six more.
No,
that's like 10 hours more film.
Well, maybe not all six, but maybe like the one Tarzan and his mate or something like that, like just to find out like is there more to these characters that gets established, because here I don't know, I didn't feel like I was invested in them and I didn't really care about them.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to actually say I don't think it's as bad as you both are doing. You both are just destroying it, which is, you know, fine. You can do whatever you feel. I don't think it's nearly as terrible as all that.
Disappointed a whole bunch of people. I just want you to know that.
I'm fine with that. I've done that my whole life. It's fine. I just think that the screaming really killed this film for me. I cannot describe how much I hate that. How much I hate listening to that garbage over and over again. I cannot stand it. If I take it out of it, it's a cool looking film. Like, I love that old look of film where it's blurry on the edges and focused in the center. It makes everything look kind of cool and creepy in a way. I thought the film started off really strong.
Yeah, no,
like
I agree.
Meeting Jane, I thought was really good. I was like, oh, this is a cool Jane. Like, I like this Jane a lot. And she's straight up wearing the outfit that Disney uses in the animated film.
Yeah.
Like straight up wearing that outfit, which was, that was cool to see also. It was like, oh, wow, look at that. I understand what you're saying. Like, I question, you know, what you say because I want you to have reasons for everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the relationship isn't, like, the Tarzan and Jane relationship, I think they spend more than enough time on it. That whole thing at the riverbank, that's more than enough time I need of them making connections. I don't need another 15 minutes of this film of them talking to each other. Are there a lot of other scenes where you're like, well, this could be a little shorter? I guess, but it's 90 minutes. I mean, you got to fill up some time. I thought it was fine towards that. I just think that the portrayal of Jane is so schizophrenic.
Yeah.
From moment to moment. Everyone else is kind of who they are.
But I feel like she only gets really crazy with Tarzan. Because, like, she had a really great thing with Harry when they were at the campfire.
Yeah, like, that little play, that little, like, she kind of playing, like, you know, coy, like, a little hard to get. But she just met the dude, like, 15 minutes ago. Like, that's fine. You know,
I know,
that.
I'm saying, like, yeah.
I know, I wasn't saying that you weren't.
Yeah, yeah. So her interaction with him, I felt like, was really... I don't know. I felt like that relationship got established really well. And then the whole her and Tarzan... was because like he couldn't talk to her, but I felt like even he didn't emote very well either, so I don't know.
I don't think he's a great actor. I mean, I think that he, you know, he's got the right build and this and that, and he played it a little bit more like she was a plaything,
yeah,
which was a little like disturbing. It was kind of rapey.
It
was kind of like, it was like, you're kind of being abusive right now, like that's a little weird. But I don't really think that we needed like another 10 minutes of them, of her being like, oh, you can't talk. Like, I got it. You know, she couldn't talk. I get that he's friends with the apes because the title of the film, Tarzan the Ape. Like, I have no issues with all that. It's just a screaming. I really can't stand the screaming.
He seemed to be more friends with the elephants.
What's up?
He seemed to be more friends with the elephants.
Tarzan the Elephant Man. See, the Elephant Man's a different movie.
Oh.
And we can watch that one too. And John Hurt's incredible in it.
Yes, it is.
But that's a whole different bag of, you know, can of worms right there. So do I think it holds up ultimately? Oof. It's really on the line for me. I'm going to say no. And I'm going to say no simply because of that old style of acting that I think rightfully got jettisoned when it did, where people started taking less of a stagey approach and more of a natural acting approach. For that reason, I think that it kind of holds this movie back. But I actually do think you should check it out. I think it's kind of a piece of movie history, and I think it's worth, you know, your one time watching. And then if you don't dig it, then you don't dig it. But I think you should watch it once.
I want to find if one of the other ones holds up a little bit better. And maybe like that's one of the ones.
Let me tell you right now. If it doesn't happen by the second or third film, stop watching them.
Well, I think the third one was Tarzan and His Meat. So I definitely want to check that one out.
Because that's the title? You're like, okay, this is the title.
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, I would just say, like, if it doesn't get better by the second or third one, it probably doesn't get better going forward. It's usually not how these things work.
No?
No, they usually get a lot worse as the further you go away from it.
Wasn't Transformers 5, like, amazing?
No, the first one was garbage also, so.
That's the only one that immediately popped in my head of having more than three, so.
All right, guys. Well, hey, that's Tarzan. Tarzan the Ape Man. Another film from our, you know, Great Movie Ride film series. One that I'd never seen before. We are now going to go into two films that I would say most of us, or a fair amount of people, is the first one I think everyone knows. I don't know if everyone's seen, which is Casablanca. That's going to be next week. And then we're going to wrap up the following week with our Wizard of Oz review. And speaking of reviews and whatnot, Melissa, don't we have a review to read?
We do. We actually have two. Our first one comes in from Brenda from DC. Not your average Disney podcast. While most Disney podcasts talk about the same old stuff like news, theme parks, and trip planning, Disney Magic Hour breaks the mold by having fun, unique, and interesting topics. One of my favorite segments are the discussion of Disney movies, from the classics to the latest releases, reimagining, rides, and even whole sections of the park, and playoff of brackets for the quote-unquote best of. The hosts have great chemistry and are energetic, funny, passionate, and knowledgeable. Keep up the great work, Pete, Melissa, Brian, and Ryan. Here's to many more anniversaries to come.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Oh, and just side note. After the Great Movie Ride series, we have this this really cool thing planned up for Epcot, and then we're going to be getting back into the Disney film realm. You know, actually, I think we're going to have Thor's going to be coming up soon.
Coco.
We got Coco coming up. We're going to have a Pixar thing coming up soon. We got a lot of good stuff coming up over the next couple of months. I'm really excited.
End of the year is going to be a good bang. And then we have our final one from Agile Dog. Great movie reviews. This podcast is primarily about Disney movie reviews, and I love that. My favorite episodes are the ones that cover movies I haven't seen. This makes me want to watch Disney movies every day.
Mm.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Huzzah. Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. And we finally cracked 100.
We got 101 reviews now.
101 reviews. Thank you guys so much for doing that. Let's keep it going. Now the next goal is 102.
That's how it works.
Reasonable goals, folks. Sell low, deliver high. Right? Yes. Yes. I don't remember if that's right. All right. So I think that's our show for this week.
Tis.
We're going to wrap this up, and we're going to go head over to Epcot. So I hope everyone enjoys your weekend, and we will see you next week for Casablanca, which we will hopefully have a couple of guests joining us. I believe Ryan will be back. Ryan will be back. Courtney will be back. We may have another special guest joining us next week. Brian is on his way, his road to recovery. He's in the forest right now. He's being held by pygmies. And it's okay.
He is the giant ape man now.
Yes. So hopefully he'll be back in about 2 weeks is what's going on. Brian's got some things.
He's got to be medically cleared for the podcast.
Man works a job that all of a sudden like has him running everywhere.
Yeah. So what happens when you become boss man?
Yeah. That's what happens. Big boss man. That's why I make the medium bucks, because I'm not big boss man. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. We will see you all next week. And as always, this episode of Disney Magic Hour has been brought to you by MEI Travel. For all your vacation planning needs, for visiting for visiting Walt Disney World, taking a cruise, or traveling anywhere around the globe, visit the experts over at meitravel.com. Becky and her team can get you started on your own adventure. Right now, you're listening to There You Are. You can find this track and more over at soundcloud.com/pogomix. And his website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter for this show at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. Head on over to Facebook. Join the group where we have news of our upcoming event on October 30th, Monday, October 30th, with Disney Master Artist Kevin John, KJ. And right now, you have only a couple of days remaining if you are joining us for that event to order your special t-shirts for The Shining. The Shining design t-shirts done by KJ that will be on sale only till October 5th.
Which is Thursday.
All right. That's it, because we got to get them made and shipped in time for the event. So it's a very limited run that we're going to be doing of those. So please, if you haven't already, PM me if you are going to be attending that event. And if you want to order the shirt, go over to Kevin John's Facebook page. If you just search for Kevin-John, you're going to find him. And he has a link for the shirts up on his Facebook page right now. And I will put it into the show notes at thelastgenpodcast.com for this episode, okay? And again, you only have till October 5th to order them. So get on that, because they are really cool looking. They're really cool looking. You can find this show on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. And on Instagram, where can everyone find us?
At Disney Magic Hour Podcast.
And Patreon, where can everyone find a way to support us?
Patreon.com/Disney Magic Hour.
Without your support, folks, this show won't continue to happen. So I appreciate everyone who is currently at Patreon, and everyone who listens, even if you're not, thank you for supporting us. Thank you for sharing the show, liking the show on Facebook, recommending it to your friends, putting up your reviews on iTunes. All of these things help us to make our voice heard in the cacophony that is the iPodcast world, especially with the subject of Disney in your title. Thank you so much for all your support. Till next week, say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Adam.
Goodnight, Adam.
Say goodnight, Pete. And say good morning to the new film basement coming next week, where we're going to open up with Blade Runner. It's going to be me and Adam. All right, guys? Really looking forward to it. Say goodnight,
Pogo. Yeah.